This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
Hi, everybody! Right, we're going to do the Q&A bit now, where we ask questions and Gareth refuses to answer them. On the basis that he doesn't talk about new stuff while it's still being written. So I'd like to start by talking to Hugh. Because you had some really interesting influences for Space Jackers, and would you like to tell us a bit about them?
So, Space Jackers, where did Space Jackers come from? There's a number of influences, and we're just talking about things like Star Wars and Treasure Island, and you know everything from Mysterious Cities of Gold to Laputa in the Sky. So many wonderful things from your childhood, and I think I've probably stolen elements of everything. But where the actual inspiration came from for the Space Jackers series was a chat down the pub with Gareth, actually, funny enough. And we were talking about novels and science fiction, and I said, why has no one ever really done a space pirate novel properly? I said, why haven't they done it? What really wound me up was space pirates, where the spaceships are shaped like ships, like old-fashioned sailing boats in space. And all the spacemen wear pirate clothes in space. And it's just ridiculous. You're saying this is just daft. Why do they do that? And they'll go, army arties, and they're, you know, anyway. So I said, why can't someone do it properly? You know, do it, it's kind of Firefly style, you know, get some gritty, nice, this is actually what it would probably look like, feel like in space. And do it for kids while we're at it. And then the idea came in, well, why don't I bloomin' do it? Gareth didn't seem to be too impressed with the idea, so I thought, I'm going to do it. Well, there you go. So that's where it all sort of started, this germ of an idea, space pirates. Then it needed a character, and Jake Cutler came into mind, and then it just grew from there. And what I try and do on the school tours is people say, where do your ideas come from? And I get the kids to draw, well, I draw the space pirate. And I say to them, what's a space pirate look like? And they have to tell me. They tell me, you know, has it got a beard? Is it a boy? Is it a girl? Is it an alien? How many eyes? How many legs? What weapons are they carrying? And we describe and we draw them. And I've done about 16 of these now, and they're all different. Every space pirate's different. So where do your ideas come from? You say 2 hours ago, that picture wasn't here. And we've created that just out of the idea of a space pirate. And so I guess all it was that conversation with Gareth. I thought, what would the next J.K. Rowling write? It wouldn't be wizards. It has to be space pirates. And it all went from there. Thank you.
So are the kids... you're going to break my microphone. Are the kids into space pirates? How's it gone down with them when you arrive at the schools and say, I'm the space pirate man?
It's tricky. When you go speak to the young ones, the 7, 8, 9-year-olds, you know, wow, it's an author. You know, ooh, what is an author? I don't know. I think they write books. You know, they're pretty in awe. But then you go and see the slightly older kids. You go to the secondary schools and you've got the 12-year-olds bordering 13 and they're a bit cool. And you go, space pirates, and they're like, yeah. It's not quite so easy. So, you know, you go from rapt audiences in primary schools who, you know, just queuing up to buy the books, signing it. I love these books. I read these books. I read these. But they're very into it. They're very engaging. Some secondary schools are, but some can be quite challenging, I must admit. So we try and cap it about 12 years old. But to be honest, I reckon they should come and read it anyway. Not in front of their friends.
Gareth, I'm going to ask you don't have to answer. What are you working on next now that the Monkey Saga is wrapped up?
I'm working on the complete and total domination of the planet. Since finishing the Monkey books, I've written a new novel, which is kind of a space opera. I say kind of because a lot of it is set in 1980s Hereford. But it's sort of a space opera mixed with a Welsh Bill Gates's memoirs, and it's a lot. Now this isn't really getting across what it's about. It's a lot more literary than the Monkey books. Not that they're not literary in their way. I mean, obviously, you know, Shakespeare wrote his famous monkey comedies. So I've got that. It's called The Uncertainty Principle, and I'm hoping that will sell to a publisher quite soon. Since then, I've started writing another space opera, a series this time. I don't want to tell you too much about it, but it's, I'm hoping it's going to be the first book in a series, kind of like Ian Banks' culture novels or a series, a set of adventures, each starring different characters, but set against a common background. And there's loads of explosions. There's Gilbrak sentient starships. There's planet-sized debt collection agencies. And it's just, it's yeah.
Cool. So has it been a wrench leaving Akak Makak behind after all this time? Because it's been a fair few years, really, hasn't it?
A wrench? That's just the way I'm standing. Yeah, in a way, because obviously I spent 3 years in the heads of those characters, so I became very, very attached to them, apart from the ones who died early. And, no spoilers. Yeah, I was sorry to see them go, but at the same time, I was really relieved as well, because as a writer, he's hard work, because he doesn't do anything you tell him to do. If you get a plot, and you think, right, okay, this is a plot, A to B to C to C, and then you start writing it, you think, oh, he's not going to do that, is he? He's just kind of shooting. And so you have to kind of, it takes you off in unexpected directions, and for instance, in Hive Monkey as well, I had a character who was supposed to die in the first third of the book, and she wouldn't. And every time I tried to kill her, she found a way out, or somebody rescued her. And it just went on and on and on. And in the end, I think she survived nearly all the way through the book. And I just gave up at the end. I went, oh, you just die. But yeah, I was kind of relieved to let go of him, because I want to get back to writing about spaceships and explosions and stuff. I don't want to wake up one morning, find myself 78 years old, having written 450 Akak Makak books and be known as the Monkey Man forever, but I at the same time, I was really sad to say goodbye to them.
Has anyone got any more questions, Justin?
I'm just curious about the setting of your story, in particular the hero Jake. That he's separated, divorced, doesn't know his parents. Why is it in children's stories that is always the starting point? Because Pullman had it in his Dark Materials work. So, and it's not uncommon, is it? So do you know why it always starts like that, and where it comes from?
It's quite funny because I suppose I probably wasn't as well versed in children's literature as I should have been when I embarked on my novel Space Jackers, and obviously that's changed since, and I've been doing a lot of very fast catch-up reading. But I did realise at one point, because I wrote the story, the idea was this guy wanted to go on a quest, he wanted to find somebody, and that's his missing father. Is his father alive? You'll have to read the series, but he had to go and find that person. The mother was almost an inconvenience, so she had to kind of die at childbirth, so she's out of the way. Now, having caught up a bit with children's reading, and he suddenly starts saying, yeah, Harry Potter, he was an orphan, wasn't he? And like you said, Dark Materials, and oh, bugger, every other child is an orphan. And I realised suddenly that I'd written quite a cliché. Or they think they are, and they, magical happy ending or not. So, I was quite surprised and probably disappointed in myself that I'd written a bit of a cliche. But it does work, because I think parents and families are baggage to a lot of heroes. You need the hero to go out guilt-free into the universe and have an adventure without having to be home by tea time or to be grounded for misbehaviour. So that's probably an easy option. There is that as well. In fact, that's an underlying theme of all the series of Space Jackers, is Jake trying to find out who he is and where he belongs, and is it where he thinks he belongs. And so it is about a search for, who you are. Okay.
There's a very good cartoon by Tom Gould, who does the cartoons in The Guardian. And I think it's called The Non-Orphaned Heroine's Quest. Where there's a tin man and a lion and a gnome or whatever, turning up on this doorstep, and they knock on the door, and the mother opens it, and they say, can Dorothy come on with us on a heroic quest? And the mother says, yes, when she's eaten her broccoli.
I think J.K. Rowling actually said the first thing that you have to do when you're writing, you know, books for children is kill the parents, or in another way, get the parents out of the way, because the parents do stop you having any fun and they stop you having the freedom to go on adventures or stuff. So if you look at, I mean, right back to Narnia, I mean, they were evacuated, so the parents were out of the way. You know, the famous five, the parents were largely absent and they would send them off to, you know, play on the island on their own for weeks on end, which you would not do now. So yeah, parents get in the way in children's literature, and if you want them to have a good time, you need to either bump off or summarily remove the parents in some way. Every Disney film, I can't think of that many children's books that I've read where the parents are actually there. Yeah, Star Wars, yeah, where there's, oh look, you're an orphan. Tragically, Wolves of Willoughby Chase was one. The parents had mysteriously they'd gone off on a cruise and drowned, and they were left with the terrible governess. So, and then I think the parents came back at the end because they miraculously survived. But for the whole of the book, there were no parents. So, has anybody else got any questions? Or has Justine got more questions?
I'm just finding it interesting that we've got two brothers here who've both wound up writing, and wondering if there's any kind of common thread about your family life or your childhood that's led you down this path.
Darkness.
In 1970 GCHQ, there was a secret experiment. Yeah. No, we've also got two sisters, and one of them has written two novels as well. I don't know what to blame it on. My mother used to take us to the library every single week, and we'd get three books out and read them, and then we'd go back and read another three. So, and they were teachers.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, yeah, both parents are teachers, which probably helps. In fact, they both ended up being headmasters of the secondary school and the primary school. So without realising it as we were growing up, we probably did have more focus on our education and books and reading, more encouragement in that direction. And I never thought of myself as a literary person, definitely not. I know Gareth was always the reader, the writer. I was the artist. There we go. I think we had that, unknowingly, we had that encouragement and that support. And even now I remember going to bed with a pile of books next to my pillow, or Beano annuals, you know, books, next to the pillow, and used to knock off at night, but rarely go to bed without a book. And I think it's only later in life when you find mates and alcohol that you maybe don't have as much time for reading. And going back to that again was good. But yeah, Sister Becky's gonna hopefully get a couple of novels published. Sister Emma, not quite in the running at the moment. There you go.
Anyone else? Yep.
Ooh, hello. Question for Gareth. With your Akak Macaque series, I was just curious. So I noticed in the reading you did that there was a little bit of information about the monkey behaviour. I was curious to know how much research you've done into the behaviour of monkeys from the beginning and how it's evolved throughout the series, and also how much criticism you've had when you've got it wrong.
Well, I lived for 4 months with a trout in Japan. I did what could probably best be called minimal research. But I kind of knew that monkeys walk on all fours sometimes and bite each other, which went a long way. But when I started writing the character, I didn't want him just to be a man in a rubber suit. That was very important. I thought, well, if he's just going to be like a grumpy guy in a rubber suit with special powers, he's Hellboy. So I thought, I really wanted him to be a monkey. So I did some kind of basic research. I didn't become Jane Goodall or anything, but I do get occasional questions on Twitter about, you know, monkey psychology. And people go, what type of macaque is he?
a fictional one.
But it's, you know, I wanted him to, there's, I think in the first book early on, he has a conversation with Kate, and he says, you know, don't smile at me, because bared teeth is like a physical challenge, no? You know, I might bite you, and watch it with the eye contact as well. And when he's in trouble, when he's trying to run, he runs on all fours, because he can run faster on all fours than he can standing up. And it's just, I wanted to get those little things in, and in each book I thought, the resolution of the novel has to have something to do with the fact he's a monkey, and not just a dude with a big gun. So, you know, it has to do with him hanging off things by his tail, or you know, do something monkey-like to justify the fact he's a monkey. So I've not really had anyone criticise him. They're probably scared to. But I might set him on them. But I think I've made him monkey enough. I think. I hope.
Not many monkeys fly airplanes, eh?
Well, you say that.
Not many.
But you do a Google search on monkey pilot, and you'd be amazed the black and white photos from World War II you can turn up. Yeah. No, they're just the stewards.
Okay, any more? So what are the differences between the two different lots of space opera, apart from the fact that one of them is weirdly set in Hereford? Yeah.
The differences are, with the first one, it's my attempt to do a sort of a slightly, I'm not going to over-egg the pudding, but a slightly more literary book than I have done in the past. Whereas the second one is just big, widescreen, balls-out space opera, basically. They're not related at all yet. I say that, I said the Recollection of the Monkey books weren't related, but they are. But the second one, the one I'm writing at the moment, is slightly more in spirit with the Recollection in the fact that there's a cliffhanger every 12 sentences. Lots of action, lots of stuff blowing up, but it's the first novel I've ever written told completely from the first person. And it's there's three or four narrators, and you get their accounts, and they're all unreliable narrators, and they've all got an axe to grind. So, and they're all working together. So it's yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm only a third of the way through. I don't know what the hell's going to happen. But at the moment, that's where we stand. The first one is much more literary. It's told in a series of flashbacks and a series of flash forwards that kind of gradually converge, and. From, as I said, 1980s Worcester to some awful time in the future. So, yeah, they're very different books, very different books. I call them both space operas because I just haven't got a clue what to call the first one. There's some stuff in space. Big stuff in space, but it hasn't got the kind of the heroic rawr of space opera. It's more kind of thoughtful, I think. Cerebral. Oh, I don't like to say that. Puts people off when you say that. No, there's still lots of adventure, there's still lots of wits. It's a bit more, the person who read it said it was, let me get this right, it was kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy crossed with Mein Kampf. So, draw your own conclusions.
Okay, anyway... If you haven't read The Recollection, by the way, it's fucking excellent, and you should. Okay. Any more questions? No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Well, this isn't going to be a question. I was going to ask you, do you think it's possible that there are still some genres still to be created? Could we create a new genre? But I think you just did. Monkey punk. Gotta be very careful with that. Monkey space pirates. Ooh, I could feel something in the wind. But no, it's you know, quite an interesting question, because every year or every couple of years we seem to come up with a new steampunk or cyberpunk or whatever it might be, and I do wonder what the next genre might be and who's going to invent it. So maybe an opportunity in the way in wings.
Thank you, everyone. Right, we'll do notices and things as nobody has any more questions. So next month is, I believe it's the 19th of January. I will just check on my phone. 19th of January is Pete and Emma Newman, which will be awesome. So you should all come to that. That's going to be a good one. On the 28th of February, Gareth and I are doing a British Fantasy Society event at Bristol Library, which will be free, and there will be wine. So, you are still doing that, right? I promised the guy that you were. He got very excited. Okay, so we are doing. I'm doing that. Gareth might have forgotten. Has anybody else got any other notices, or anybody want to say anything about North by Southwest, or you want me to say something about North by Southwest? Okay, the North by Southwest anthology that we've been talking about forever is fully funded and is meant to be going to the printers on Saturday. So that will be out. Yeah. So that will be out at some indefinite period in the future, but there will be a launch and it will probably be in here, and we'll let you know what happens with it as it happens. Yes. Has anyone got anything else? Any? Yep.
The book I've just been reading from is launched. Des is launching with us at Forbidden Planet on the 15th of January. And because all you bastards retweeted a tweet for me, I'm coming in full monkey costume.
Everybody bring your cameras. Yes, you did. Yes, you took on Twitter and you lost. All right, if that's it, thank you all for coming and have a lovely Christmas. And I will see you all next month. All right, take care.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.